If I can get Doug and Phil up. How are you all? How is everyone, by the way? Boogieing?
Boogieing.
Thank you so much for doing this, guys. Really appreciate it. We've heard from some of the younger people today, and so I Riss tries to convince me I'm not old sometimes, so it's okay, I'm with you. But I'd like to hear more learned and wise, and I'd like to hear how you guys define what happiness is, what being happy means to you.
You get some bubble wrap and you go behind a technician who's working on a live piece of equipment and he's so focused and you go and you wrap and it goes and he thinks it's sparking and he nearly has a heart attack and you fall on the ground laughing. He's not happy, but I am.
Good answer. Any workplace pranks, Doug?
No. I think it's like humanly, in our general existence, happiness is a sense of well-being, a sense that things are going all right in my life, that I'm coping, that I've managed to deal with the things that are that might cause me stress, and I'm actually doing some of the things I really want to do, and my life's meaningful. So I think all of those things together bring a sense of happiness to people generally. But for all of us, it's different. I think our different personalities, and as we've seen from the different generations, the things that bring that happiness to us are quite different. But I'd like to sum it up in the word that was used previously, just that word of flourishing, thriving or flourishing. Mm-hmm. A sense that life is good, I'm coping okay, and I'm going where I want to go. Mm-hmm. So I'm enjoying this journey. Mm-hmm. To me, that's the crux of general happiness throughout humankind.
It's interesting you bring up the role of personality. I was thinking, like Josh mentioned about, you know, how routine for him is something that he just is like pulling teeth. Whereas for other people, routine might be a wonderful, joyous thing. And I'm really glad you mentioned that. Has your view of what it means to be happy changed over your life? I mean, I'm assuming it has. So maybe a better question would be, how has it changed?
If you're just talking about happiness, no, I still get as much fun with the bubble wrap as I would if, when I was
Excellent.
19. So
that's important.
Oh, sorry, yes. if you're just talking about happiness, yes.
Because
to me, happiness, a lot of the things that were up on the board, there's those moments of happiness. I see my happiness as an emotion.
Okay.
That's good. Yeah, for me, it changed dramatically when I had this experience, just as God drew me into our denomination, discovering that God has a plan for all mankind. And now this plan is set in concrete, it's going to happen, and we're actually a part of the whole process of it. So for me, happiness changed dramatically when I stopped thinking about what I need to do to achieve happiness and began to think about what I've been fortunate enough to be a part of and how this this whole future that lies ahead of us is going to mean happiness for all mankind. That brought a great deal of different approach to me to happiness in general. Mm. And it changed the direction that I sort of went to find that contentment and happiness. It was in being part of what I've discovered.
Yeah. We'll get to the faith aspect a bit, but Phil, you brought up a really interesting point. And this was a question asked to the other four interviewees. How do you view the difference between happiness and joy?
Quite dramatically different. Happiness to me is an emotion. You can be quite happy. When something fantastic happens that you really wanted, all of a sudden it's turned on its head, and then you can be quite sad about it. So that, but to me, joy is experiencing a moment, regardless of whether it's a good or a bad situation. I was thinking, Iris was playing a beautiful piece of music, a concerto, and I was thinking, as I was listening to that, if you're very self-focused, you could think, well, I don't like the clarinet, I don't like her choice of music, I don't like whatever. You could pick all those things. Or you could think, well, I don't, but I'll listen. But I chose to just shut my eyes and listen. And in that moment of just being in harmony with that music, it was a moment of joy. And so it wasn't... Yeah, it, as I focused on being in harmony with what was happening, I felt, yeah, the joy just... joyous moment, and I'll treasure it.
Mm.
Thanks, Iris. That was beautiful. I love that.
I might ask you, Doug, and a similar question was asked to Nicole. You spent time in the Solomon Islands, and I just wonder if you could comment on your experience with a developing nation, with the people of a developing nation, how they view happiness, and whether how that's impacted you. Because, you know, as Nicole said, you know, even, you know, just the general view is, I think, you know, there's a sense of happiness and joy in people that aren't surrounded by a materialistic world, and that materialism kind of shackles us, and they're a little bit freer. Does that sound like what your experiences are?
Yeah, as Nicole said, you go into these third world countries, and Marg and I have been fortunate to do that in several places, and you just see the joy and the happiness of youth, teenagers, just being thrilled to bits with the least little event that's happening, and just enjoying each other's company and really rejoicing in their life. And you return to our society and you just see so often the sullenness and the just unhappiness and whatever. And it's hard to really, I think, understand what causes it all. But I know that in the Solomons, it's just a beautiful thing that you watch the kids just having an absolutely glorious time. But I'd like to say, too, that it's also in the parents in that situation. Because Mark and I often, we'd go to bed of a night, everyone in the village. Well, firstly, in the houses, they live in quite big family groups. There might be 8 or 10 in the house. So we'll go to bed, there's no lights anywhere. And all of a sudden you hear gales of laughter come from one little house in one corner, wakes everyone up and then settles down. And gales of laughter from somewhere else. Just a joy in life that over the very simplest of things. And they'd put on island nights where they'd have little acts that people do. And they'd be the most simplistic things that they would be doing. But they'd all be rolling around on the ground with laughter at that. And, you know, I think that just that simple life, they live in these little grass huts and they grow their own vegetables and do a bit of fishing and that's their life. Just that simplicity of life and away from all the pressures that that are in our society seems to give them that real joy. Mm. And it really concerns me when I consider the difference with youth, because there's so much of a challenge for our kids today to find what are the real sources of happiness and the joy, and being caught up in all the stresses of their lives, which they really can't avoid, but they've got to find out how to deal with. So it's a great delight to see that simple life and that simple joy. But, of course, they want what we've got. They don't see it. Yeah. But we see it because we're fresh to that area.
Yeah. One final question for you both. How has faith shaped your view of happiness and joy?
I'll go back to the analogy of Iris playing the music. Growing up and having a totally self-centred focus, and then through the revelation, God's revelation through Christ, through Scripture, starting to see that I'm not the centre, starting to see where the centre is, changing my focus, all of a sudden realising there's this incredible dance or piece of music, it's happening, and I've got a choice to either be part of it, like I listen to Iris's piece of music, or to you know, stand up and make a big noise and you know, destroy the moment. And so in that, it's coming to see that what is God doing. And I think that the pivotal moment is when Christ was on the cross, and it says that it was for the joy that was set before him he endured the cross, which is totally counterintuitive. How can something so horrendous have a moment of joy? And it was at that moment, I can see it, there's this moment of pure love, just this pure generosity that God would die for us. And that, at that moment, time stops. It takes your breath away. You just go, wow. And if in life there's a moment where you can look back into the eyes of Christ and see it and get it for a second, you want to chase that forever.
Well said. Doug?
As has already been said, the two words are often considered to be synonyms. But, you know, when James talks about us going through trials, he makes the point that we don't have to be happy with what's happening to us. So despite the lack of happiness, we can still have joy. And I think the key to understanding that is just to realise that joy is a fruit of the Spirit. So it's as the Spirit works in us and gives us that big picture of what God is doing for all of humanity, that doesn't change when we go through trials. So we can be unhappy, but full of joy. But having said that, though, I think every one of us, when it's our trial, we need each other. We need each other around to remind us that that's where we should be looking.
And that's a brilliant point. Sorry, one last question. Do you think joy is a solitary thing? Do you think it can be a solitary thing, or do you think it is magnified in community? I mean, you talked about this dance that you enter into.
I think it. I feel very strongly that it's actually connecting with who we are. I've always grown up with this mentality of God's out there and I'm here and the universe is there and I'm sort of standing on top of it. But coming more recently to the understanding of being part of it, like a fish in the ocean swimming, or just being a part of what's happening, and God's in charge. And at that moment you go, I can be like the little child and just boogie at church. And you know what? If somebody laughs, it doesn't matter, because I'm God's child. And you know what? You want to mess with me? You got to talk to my dad.
Yeah, that joy that we've been talking about is something that we participate in together, don't we? It's just a beautiful thing, the community that God's called us into and the things that we can share together. And we talked a lot some years ago about ecclesia, just this body of Christ. It's all about our relationship with Christ and in Christ together. And that joy comes from that life that we have, a flourishing life.
Well, I'd like to thank you both for participating and for being so willing to. Please thank Doug and Phil. Is anyone freaked out if I don't have the podium in front of me? Because I can move it back, it's no trouble. I know, it feels more intimate this way. Thank you so much to those of you who were so willing to share your views. There were a few people who we contacted and said, I've had a pretty grumpy week, I don't think I'm in the mood for this, and which is fair enough, but... thank you for those that did share. And it's interesting, Rhys mentioned that the youth were the ones who suggested this idea. And it was actually in response community prayer a couple of weeks ago. Peter Stevenson, where's Peter? Oh, he's gone. Oh. Peter mentioned about, I can't remember the exact figure, which is what I was going to ask him, but he mentioned about young people in the community who are struggling and a number of suicides. And it got the young people thinking, well, okay, well, you know, this is going on all around us. You know, what Riss mentioned about, you know, struggles with mental health, with stress, with all the challenges of daily life. And even though we live in what is apparently the most peaceful, most prosperous, even though Facebook might tell a different story, we are actually getting smarter as people. It is actually a wonderful time to be alive. And yet, depression is the number one illness prescribed by diagnosed by doctors. And so there's clearly this massive disconnect. And so it's been hinted at this morning what the 3 points that I'm going to wrap up with. But for the sake of clarity, and so that you actually, you know, take it home with you, I want to just give you 3 points to think about. Number one, happiness and joy are fruit. As Riss mentioned, and as a number of the interviewees mentioned, it's not the object that you chase. It's a byproduct of it. If you spend your whole life chasing joy and happiness, you're not going to find it. But if you do all those things in regular life with a spirit of joy, that fruit will grow, it will blossom. It's quite counterintuitive, isn't it? We're told in the Western world that, you know, happiness is something obtainable. But it's not. It slips through our fingers like oil. And yet if we go about our daily life, we notice, we become aware of the joyful things in our life. I want to read a passage from C.S. Lewis. I'm not sure if, do we have the time? Okay, I won't read it. But if you read, there are several passages in C.S. Lewis's works where he talks about happiness, he talks about joy, and he talked about coming to the understanding that joy is not something that can just be obtained by chasing after it. And we find a very similar parallel in Luke 9. In Luke 9, Christ talks about if you want to save your life, you'll lose it. But if you lose your life, you will save it. What good is it to gain the whole world but to forfeit your soul? You won't find true happiness if you chase them. Once we lose the focus from ourselves, once we throw off the shackles of self-centeredness, we are free to be joyous. Point number two, and this is something that a number of the interviewees mentioned as well. Happiness and joy are not dependent on circumstance. Joy in particular, as Phil mentioned, is something that it's an undercurrent in our lives that is constant. And I can't remember, was it which one of you mentioned? I think it was you, Phil, who mentioned James. James is writing, I consider it pure joy to be going through these trials. Pure joy. We don't have to be happy about, but it is pure joy. That's something I can't wrap my head around. as we enter into it, we might start to catch a glimpse of it. It's kind of a paradox, isn't it? I don't think we've got time either. So I was going to read a passage by Chesterton, but won't worry about that. But I think of the example of Beethoven. If you've ever seen a picture of Beethoven, Beethoven's often depicted as this very stern, very serious man, particularly later in his life when he went deaf. And yet, if you've ever listened to his final symphony, his choral symphony, it is this joyous work. The climax is even called Ode to Joy. And we sometimes think, it made me think, at least, when I first realized that, well, how is this serious man able to write this uplifting music? I want to read Philippians 4, verses 10 to 13. I think it's important that I read this one. Philippians 4, 10 to 13. I rejoice greatly in the Lord that at last you have renewed your concern for me. Indeed, you have been concerned, but you had no opportunity to show it. I'm not saying this because I am in need, for I have learned to be content whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do everything through him who gives me strength. The only way joy can matter in our lives is if it is a constant underlying presence, regardless of circumstances. And this doesn't deny the suffering or the pain or the grief we may be going through, but it calls it for what it is. It calls that suffering temporary. Even if it is for the rest of our lives, it is still temporary suffering. We have future joy awaiting us that we cannot even comprehend. And we have this great joy awaiting us because we have great hope. This is point three. Our salvation is a gift. No amount of suffering will hasten the coming of heaven. No amount of pleasure or positive thinking can help us reach heaven. It is pure giving of the Lord that makes this salvation possible. We don't have to try and figure it out. We don't have to even get it. We don't even have to really fully understand it. It simply comes as a result of what Jesus has done. I think it's really interesting. I remember hearing a sermon. I can't remember who gave it. But they were talking about the Beatitudes. And I'd always thought the Beatitudes were like commands. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Oh, okay. The kingdom of heaven comes about if I'm poor in spirit. And in the sermon, the person said, no, they're not prescriptive. But there is one command at the end of the Beatitudes. Does anyone know what it is? Matthew 5:12. It's very simple. Rejoice and be glad. Henri Nguyen said, life is a time when sadness and joy kiss each other at every moment. And all these things, suffering, joy, happiness, hope, faith, they form this beautiful intersection. But they don't define it. They simply point to that which does. So here is my take-home point for you. May we stop chasing happiness. May we find it in the midst of the storm and the midst of the still. May we know there is no greater joy awaiting us, no greater joy than we can imagine awaiting us because of Christ, what Christ has done. Thanks for being very patient with us. I'll hand over to Cheryl for the final song.